the levels of her property,
yep,
with the finished levels of the subject DA. We have photographs in the officer's report, but when you're there, the harbour bridge looks much more prominent. The harbour bridge fills up much more.
Yeah. Well,
whole harbour bridge. It's quite a significant view.
Yeah, there's a couple of points to add to that, I guess. So I can talk about the Gladstone Street properties on the north side as well, but I thought we might be talking about the Fawcett Street property. The council report doesn't consider other vantage points where that view is available. So there is a dormer window on that property. Aaron's actually been in there, and my understanding is it's a bedroom. It's not obviously the same standard of amenity as the ground floor living areas. But there is a bedroom up there with a dormer window. And the neighbouring property has a dormer window as well, which has a rear extension coming off it. So there's scope for those properties to retain that view or expand upon it. Yeah. The other point I'd like to make is we're talking about view sharing, obviously. The subject property is basically the only property in the locality that doesn't have a view. Everyone else around that has a view. We're trying to retain the view at number 11 because number 11 is now under separate ownership to number 9. They've been in common ownership for 50-odd years, but they're now under separate ownership for the first time. There will be a DA on number 9, number 11 in the future because someone's bought it, so presumably they intend to develop that land. We've sought to retain that view corridor basically through to the Harbour Bridge, which is in a slightly northern aspect from Gladstone Street. So Gladstone Street properties orient perfectly north-south, and the Harbour Bridge is on a slightly northern angle. So that will retain the views to that portion. I think looking at the view loss planning principle, which alludes to reasonableness and whether a more skillful design could deliver the same level of amenity to this property, I don't see how else we can get a view to our property that everyone else around us has got, aside from putting that first floor in its exact location, which kind of segues into that next point, which is Council's Heritage Officer actually recommended that exact condition. Council's town planner decided to omit that condition. We'd accept that condition. I mean, we think it's a shame to get this far. I've been on this job for 18 months. We're two applications down, two ad info letters down. I think it'd be a shame, given what I've said before, to be looking at a reason for refusal being something that council was already happy to condition, which is that last point. That'll also maybe help with that view a little bit too. The other thing I think we can condition is that we've got plans which show what the ground floor looks like. We're happy either way. If it comes down, the neighbours will be happy. Less overshadowing, less privacy, or maybe more privacy impacts in some aspects, but less view loss impacts. If it stays where it is, we retain the building, which is the intent of the design that's before you.
Besides the neighbour in Fawcett Street retaining the view from the dormer, have you done a view analysis of, or do you have analysis of the impacts on the view with the lowered building property?
The boundaries between the properties on the northern side of Gladstone Street and the southern side of Darling Street, ours is actually the furthest due south. So most of the properties are further north, which means they all have a natural aspect in that northerly direction I talked about, sort of a east-northeast direction towards the Harbour Bridge. So there's no way that we can interfere with any of those. And beyond that, all the properties are higher anyway. So the only property that could be affected is that Fawcett Street property. And like I said, there's a dormer window that council's report hasn't accounted for.
But that's not a living room area, I presume. It's different when you've got a view from your living area than a bedroom, though.
I agree. Yeah, but like I said, we're talking about a principle of view sharing. So we're trying to get some view. We've got none.
Sure.
That property's further away from the Harbour Bridge than we are, and it's looking across all of our property boundaries. There's a new development that will happen at number 11. That's likely to impact on that view as well.
And we also considered the original building, which is in one of the structural report, actually, was a double-storey, almost ball-front residence there that we believe, urban legend says, it went in a fire to what it is now. But we presented that to the council planner as well. And that's where we ended up with this step back and this small sort of single level at the front and step back to the two-storey, which was not part of our original proposal. But we did that to create more of a view corridor. So this was worked through with our planner, council's representative planner, to retain that sort of lower level at the front, which is what you see, and then step back to the second floor so that we retain a bit of that corridor.
And this development will actually retain that view, not in its entirety, obviously, but there is some portion of that Harbour Bridge view which will remain available from the living areas with a full uninterrupted view available from that dormer. Mm. So it's not a complete obliteration of that view.
Okay. Any other questions?
No. No, we don't have it in front of us, so we don't know. Well, we don't know what we even like.
We haven't seen any of these.
Well, you need to say that.
Our problem to a large extent is we haven't had any evidence of some of that. We have seen no view analyses other than what you've provided.
Well, like I said, you can naturally see that those properties to the west will retain the view. It's really just that Fawcett Street property.
Yeah.
We can't do that view analysis without going in there. Aaron went in there a long time ago when he was first looking at the site for the client. I don't think we could get in there now. It's on council to have a look at it. And I don't think you even need... You can tell that it's an extra 2 or 3 metres higher, that view will be retained. I personally don't think an analysis is actually needed.
Can I just
have one final point, is that what we see as a resolution, we understand the panel's issues is, I mean, you basically tell us what floor level you want and we'll deliver it. We've prepared plans for a lower floor level, and like I said, the final reason for refusal, there's a condition presumably already in the heritage officer's comments which actually directly addresses that issue. We could accept both of those conditions, and rather than having a refusal...
Sorry, which issue does the Heritage Office report address?
In the Council Assessment Report, I haven't read the Heritage Office's comments, but the Council Assessment Report says the Heritage Officer recommended Condition D, effectively, but that Council's Town Planning Officer basically did away with that condition, didn't think it was necessary. But it would be already there in draft form, presumably, in the Heritage Office comments for us to have a condition that we would accept.
And we accept the other conditions that the council officer put forward in regards to the 4.3 metre rear setback to that balcony. Yeah. We were going to request that the 1.6 high metre sill be changed to opaque rather than a sill height of 1.6. But every other condition we were coming today to say we are very happy to accept based on the many, many months of to and fro with council to get to even that point.
And on that last point... I just mentioned before that if we were to drop that, you might still be unsure about privacy issues. Council's report actually says we don't need the condition. It just says it's an extra layer of privacy. Council was satisfied that there weren't unreasonable privacy impacts, but the condition was imposed as an extra layer. What Aaron's suggesting is we'll keep that condition, but with opaque glazing to 1.6, which means even if the panel were of a mind to drop it down even further, there'd still be no privacy impact because, I'm 1.8, so we're talking about, here, with a kitchen bench also providing that extra layer of privacy.
Right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can we talk about it?
We stay with the decision.
Only business I'd like to hear.
All right. The panel's come to a decision which is unanimous here. It is to refuse. To refuse on the grounds set out on the screen. This is not to say that you can't have a two-storey dwelling on this site, but it needs a few changes. And in refusing it, it doesn't prevent you from coming back with an amended design on an 82A review application, and that is what we suggest. And that would in turn meet the objections that you've heard about from the neighbours. We feel that is the appropriate way to go here. There are too many changes for us to tweak it with conditions. It really means quite a bit of tweaking. But with enough tweaking, you can get your consent. So the determination of the panel, which is unanimous, is as follows. The Inner West Local Planning Panel, the Inner West Local Planning Panel, exercising the functions of the council as the consent authority, pursuant to section 4.16, functions of the council, pursuant to section 4.16 of the Environmental Planning and Assessment Act 1979.
Pursuant to section
4.16 of the Environmental Planning and Assessment Act 1979.
Environmental EPA
Act 1979.
Yep.
EPA Act. Disagrees with the findings contained in the assessment report.
Disagrees with the findings contained in the assessment and resolves
that the application be refused
for the following reasons.
Yeah. Panel happy?
Yeah.
Unanimous? That's the determination. All right. Yeah. So we can now move on to item 10. This is the proposal to amend trading hours of the existing premises at 569 Darling Street, Roselle. Is Mr. Nemeth here? Is Mr. Nemeth here? You're representing?
I'm representing myself
as a resident.
As a resident.
Yes.
Adjoining.
Please take a seat. But no, take a seat, because you can't be heard unless you turn on the mic.
He's from 571, next door neighbour.
Okay. Your name and address, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Alex Nemeth. I live next door to the premises at 571 Darling Street, Roselle.
Next door?
I do, yes.
Right, okay. You have 3 minutes.
Prior to starting the 3 minutes, I would ask, in case I've practiced this speech, in case I mumble or stumble or whatever, I do have some copies that, if the chair and the panel would like to have them in front of them, they're verbatim copies of this speech.
Well, your time starts now.
Okay. As a resident, the Leichhardt Environmental Plan and the DCP are my guides for interpreting development in my neighbourhood. They define in comprehensible language the different zones, the objectives, and the permitted uses that I can expect. The complying development certificate that this applicant used to establish these premises, viewed objectively, could be considered to be disingenuous. The principal certifying authority was not the council, it was a private certifier, a facilitator who asserted that the establishment of the massage parlour was carried out in accordance with approved plans and drawings. It wasn't, still isn't, but that's a matter for another place and time. That it is in fact a neighbourhood shop, really, and it meets the day-to-day needs of the residents, really and truly. There are 4 Asian massage premises 5 minutes walk up the road, and in addition to this, protects and enhances our residential amenity. An important aspect of amenity, as I understand and defined by the courts, is the intangible one, the reasonable expectations of the neighbourhood and the residents. So then sadly it's checkmate, that's the game, that's the shaky foundation. But if we must accept this massage parlour as a shop, and we do, then at least the operators should be obliged to follow the approved plans and conditions of consent that they agreed to. They do neither. They're open daily till 8 p.m. despite requests by council, development control orders being made. There's neither enforcement nor penalty that I'm aware of. But a DA is lodged as a way out. Some important points. In the council proposal, clause 6.10, use of existing buildings is a general preliminary clause for the residential zone R1. Business premises are then required to be qualified and clarified in the land use table for residential R1 with subgroup terms. Business premises, a group term, is not permitted in the land use table for residential R1. The assessment report also implies some inherent and very desirable continuity between the massage parlour's location and the commercial uses on the western side of Darling Street. It mentions medical centres and dry cleaners, but the massage parlour is located in those businesses are located in zone B2, and the massage parlour is in zone residential 1. There's a zone change there. So is this rezoning by stealth, a little bit at a time, every time, simply because commercial operators want it, compliance is too hard, take away 10 evening and weekend hours that we've had for 12 years that contribute positively to residential amenity and say that's okay, and absolve the applicant's transgressions in the process? So what's in it for the residents? The positive side, not a thing. On the negative side, we lose confidence in the provisions and protections of the LEP, the DCP and the zone boundaries. We see commercial interests being put ahead of the residents' interests in our zone. We lose confidence in the council's role in the regulation and enforcement of development conditions of consent. And we have to then acknowledge that we are in reality powerless when it comes to challenging private certification. I submit that the application lacks any genuine merit and respectfully ask that the panel dismiss the application and the council's recommendation, and I thank you for your time.
You did well,
thank you.
Even though you went over time.
I'm my apologies.
Thank you, we got thank the message.
Sorry, sir, could I just ask a question?
Yes.
So from what I've just heard, I understand that you are of the view that a business premises isn't permissible in the R1 zone, is what you're saying?
The umbrella term business premises is not in the LEP as a permitted land use in residential
R1.
Zone.
Okay, because the report doesn't... I didn't look up the LEP myself, but the report doesn't say that. Can we clarify that with the council?
Could I make the additional point that clause 6.10 that the council refers to, which is entitled Use of Existing Buildings in Residential Zone R1, can actually, with a couple of legal mates, be used as a basis for denying any kind of commercial operation in the premises at 569 Darling Street, because the premises were built as a residence for one Alexander Boyd in 1902, and he was an inspector of police and a JP. So the premises were never constructed for any reason other than residential. But that clause is the beginning clause. It's the land use clause that we're entitled to rely on.
Can we just...
Mr. Namath, it's under the land use zoning table, yes. Business premises are permissible in this zone.
In the land use table, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just the definition of business premises.
Oh, yes.
Can we just clarify with the planner, please? But a shop's on a business premise.
Yes, shops are permissible, and the principal certifying authority has stated that this is a retail neighbourhood shop.
So
there is a dictionary at the end of the LEP, which we all rely on.
Okay, I understand your point. Okay, so we just need to clarify, is a business premise permissible or not?
The business premises is defined to include an occupation, profession or trade.
That's not his issue. He's saying it's not actually business. The term business premise isn't a permissible use in the zone, full stop. Forget about that. It might be the definition is business premises. But he's contending that a business premise is not a permissible use. You can't have a permissible use. It doesn't matter how it's defined. It's not prohibited use. That's the point he's saying. I never checked that in the LEP myself.
I haven't got the LEP in front of me. No. We're checking it with the LEP.
I did contact council about umbrella terms and sub-umbrella terms, and they informed me that at the direction of the Department of Planning, umbrella terms and sub-umbrella terms can be used and should be used independently where appropriate. So if an umbrella term appears in the land use table, it's open slather. So if business premises are permitted in land use table zone R1, that's it.
Sorry, your reading of... was that business premises are prohibited use. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that in the land use table specific for R1, the LEP specifically states a number of subcategories of business premises, which it's required to do by the Department of Planning. It says that these are the kinds of business premises. These are the kinds of business premises
right,
we will allow.
Okay, I see. So the way the land use table works is there's uses that are permissible,
yes,
that are specified.
Yes.
There's uses that are prohibited that are specified.
That's correct.
And the way that wording, the clause is worded, is that anything else that's not specifically listed as being prohibited is permissible. So a business use is wholly permissible in the zone.
With respect, though, the principal certifying authority has not used that clause. The principal certifying authority asserts that these premises are a neighbourhood retail shop. Now, I could go to the Building Professionals Board, but that doesn't do anything about this application. On a personal basis, I have no problem with the shop next door. I approve it. Quite happy with it. Live with it for 15 years.
So your issue is how the certifier has approve the shop in the first place?
Well, that's a separate issue that I can take up in a different forum from this one. What I'm concerned about is that the applicants knew what the terms and conditions for a shop were. I believe that if we're forced to accept the fact that it's a shop pending the decision by another forum, I'm okay with that. But I see absolutely no merit in asking a panel to increase their hours of trading when they knew full well what they were letting themselves in for when they took on the premises, which had been empty for 12 months.
Is a neighbourhood shop permissible? Is a neighbourhood shop permissible?
It is a residential zone after all.
Category one, right? So change of use business premises, an exempt development to change it from a shop to a business premises. It's exempt.
But
the CDC is irrelevant because it's exempt to change it to from a shop.
But why did they issue a CDC then?
I believe the CDC was for other works. But it's exempt development anyway. To change of use is exempt.
And his neighbourhood shop, just say that you do it as a CDC and they did the change of use using the CDC methodology, was the neighbourhood shop permissible in the zone?
A shop is permissible.
Just say straight out shop is permissible in the zone.
Yep.
Mm. Okay, so it's not an issue with that.
Yep.
Okay.
Do you want to explain that?
So from what we just had explained to us just then, a straight-out shop is permissible in the zone.
And I'm fine with that.
A straight-out neighbourhood shop is permissible in the zone.
Fine with that.
So there doesn't seem to be any problem with the certifier approving it as a neighbourhood shop, or a shop, whatever you want to call it.
Well, all I say is that's a shaky foundation to be determined in another environment. What I object to are the increase in the hours.
Okay.
Over the consent conditions.
Okay, I just want to understand, because you've raised issues of permissibility and that put doubts in my mind. It's like, we don't really go into the issue of permissibility. It says it's compliant, but it's reasonable to explore that. So
I guess what I'm suggesting is that the recommendation of council is a bit of an appeasement, a bit of an each-way bet. It's a little bit soft. I accept the shop. It's the hours that I...
Okay, so it's there at the moment. It's got an approval. So your concerns with the hours are what?
My concern with the hours are that the applicants knew the conditions of consent when they took on this empty shop. They haven't complied with those conditions of consent despite active orders. They've asked for a different set of hours, that there is no actual genuine merit being presented in this proposal other than to say that it's possible to grant them that. As a resident in the area, I'm saying that comes at a cost of residential amenity. And that factor of residential amenity that is so rarely mentioned but so well defined in the courts is that it's the reason, it also includes the reasonable expectations of the residents and the neighbourhood. I'm not concerned about noise and smell. They're the quietest neighbours I've ever had. It's the hours and the encroachment on residential amenities. So they take away our evenings, they want to take away our Saturday afternoons and Sundays, and kind of replace them with a facetious argument that says we're fulfilling the day-to-day needs of the residents of the area. That's where I see a lack of merit. They knew what they were letting themselves in for when they signed leases to agree to behave. I have no personal moral position on massage parlours or retail shops.
So just in terms of unreasonable impacts on amenity...
Yes.
The hours, the extension of hours, you just said in terms of taking away evenings and Saturday afternoons, is there any... recognising that... amenity is a very qualitative word.
Yes, it's a fair concept. Yep.
But are there any measurable impacts that, in terms of trying to understand what the amenity is that's being undermined?
Well, the amenity that's being undermined is that simply by stating it, a different standard is being applied now from the development application of 2007. Which led to the establishment of a patisserie and tea room on those premises. I was totally in support of that. It was something that could demonstrably be demonstrated to be of day-to-day use to the residents. That process was done in consultation with Leichhardt Council. There were submissions, there were hearings, there was some sensible adjudication about what's good and what's not good. And amenity on the weekends was considered to be very important. There was enough commerce blocks up the road. So when I look at council's recommendation, it robs an hour off each day, 4 days a week. It robs 2 hours on Thursday night. It robs 4 more hours on Saturday afternoon, leaving aside public holidays. Why?
Can I just ask, but what is it robbing you of? Like, we have to have something substantial in terms of what... Is it just people coming and going? Is it noise? Is it traffic? What is it that's a problem?
The reaffirmation that we live in a residential zone, not a quasi-commercial zone. We live in residential R1. We've paid a lot of money to be there. We're there for the long term. We're happy to see interesting things happen. We're happy to obey the rules. The massage shop can come in there and just obey the rules.
I guess it isn't like the R1 zone allows business premises.
And I'm happy with
that. So it's not a wholly residential zone, is it?
But it's residential R1 where the interests of the residents should trump, and I use that word advisedly, the interests of commerce. And I'm sorry to use that word.
I can see the point, but the resident R1 zone isn't like an R2 zone that's wholly residential, and R1 allows, for better or worse, zoned R1.
Yeah, like I understand, I understand and agree, but I'm looking for the merit in increasing the hours of commerce, the merit for the residents, the day-to-day needs.
What you're being asked is, what is the physical environmental impact upon you of these extended trading hours? What is it? Is it... What is the physical environmental impact?
The impact is on amenity.
In what way?
It's on residential amenity, and the definition of
it. In what way?
It's that intangible aspect of amenity that's well defined by the courts, which is that it can it has a large component which consists of the reasonable expectations of the residents and the neighbourhood. That's been articulated half a dozen times in Land and Environment Court rulings. Right. So what I'm losing for no gain in a residential area are these weekend hours and an hour every evening, 4 days a week, and another couple of hours. For what? For nothing. Because Commerce thinks it's a good idea and hasn't obeyed the rules so far for 6 months? Doesn't make sense to me. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, panel.
You see on the screen the description of the application. We'll hear from the applicant. Is the applicant here? Mm. Come forward, please. Those hours... First, name and address, please.
Hello, panel. My name is Tong Xie. I'm the applicant from a creative non-interior design company. Our address is in Altimo.
Sorry, what was the company?
Creative Nine.
Creative Nine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now.
And you have other massage parlors?
We apply for the CDC for them. Yes, that's correct.
No, I said you have other massage parlours.
Do we? We are the interior design company. We do the interior design for different tenancies. Yes. And we don't own any massage parlours.
Have you seen the recommended hours following your application?
Yes. Thank you for the case officer. We work really closely with the council. The recommended hours is compared to what we propose is, the current hours, existing hours, is only 1 hour extra. And then the recommended hours has removed public holidays and then keep the center as 1 p.m. The overall, we are more than happy to just follow this, the new schedule.
All right, now, when we went past, there was a flashing sign in the window.
Yes.
Is it intended that that flashing sign operate until closing time?
Sir, what do you mean?
The flashing sign.
Yes, the flashing sign will be turned off once the shop is closed. But
can I ask you, why do you need a flashing sign? Because most massage parlours don't have a flashing sign.
The flashing sign can be removed. It's not necessary to be there. If you want to put a condition to the approval, we are more than happy to remove it.
620.
Signs, an open sign and massage.
They both can be removed.
Have you seen proposed condition 7?
Condition 7, sorry?
Proposed condition 7.
Sorry, I just don't have that page with me.
Shall not be operated outside the approved hours.
Yes.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah. The illuminated signage, you're talking about the flashing signs, isn't it? Yes. We are more than happy to remove them, and then we can make sure that there won't be any flashing signs installed on the shop front.
All right. Now, looking at condition 1, the hours of operation.
Yep.
That's not what you're seeking.
Sorry?
You're seeking
Yes, this is not what we're seeking. The seeking ones is, for example, Monday to Friday is supposed to be 9 to 7, which is we agreed with council.
Yes.
And then Thursday, Saturday is what we agreed in council.
Yep.
Sunday, we were originally applied from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Yes.
And then council put a suggestion as 1 p.m. And we will suggest the public holiday, which is the existing trading hours right now, is 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., which is we asking for to keep existing. The suggestion, however, suggests keep the Sunday from 9 to 1 p.m. and remove the public holiday. We understand there is opinion from the neighborhood. We want to keep the good relationship with the neighbors. That's why we want to honor this suggestion from council.
So can I ask, is there a need for it to be open on a Sunday? Currently it's not open on a Sunday.
The nature of the massage shop is...
Sorry?
The nature of the massage shop is for people to relaxing. I asked the client, I had a few conversations with the client. They says the majority of the clients, they're busy during the work hours. So maybe 6 to 7 o'clock is some the window time they can actually visit their shops. So that, and also, of course, the weekends. So that's why we're thinking maybe we can, you know, honor the suggestion from council, only open maybe 4 or 5 hours during the Sunday, and we remove the public holidays. We can make everyone's happy and everyone's on the same page.
Thank you.
And do you need to operate until 8 p.m. on a Thursday?
8 p.m. Thursday always is the most busy time of the week because they're supposed to be late trading hours. So generally speaking, you can generate more sales for the client. So in the business point of view, trying to increase the business, we were suggesting one hour extra. So this is just a one day only for the whole week.
Well, I suppose I'll go back to... Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Friday is 9 till 7. Is there any reason why it could not cease at 6 p.m? And then perhaps on Thursday you could have till 7 p.m.
For example, if I'm working, I finish work at 5:30. If I need a massage, I need to find a shop that can open till 7 because it's taking me half an hour to go to the shop. And then the session normally takes, you know, 45 minutes or even 1 hour. So, generally speaking, if it's 6 o'clock, which is the operate now, the sales for them is just not sustainable. So that's why we were kind of like asking the council to consider to improve the business in the local area. This is really reasonable suggestion. We didn't ask for more because initially we were thinking maybe 9 o'clock to increase the sales. However, we understand the gentleman, they were worried about the neighbors. I said, okay, we have to work something together. That's why the reasonable hours suggested by council we fully support.
Can I ask how many clients or patients at the one time?
We have 3 massage rooms. So in general, we have 2 staff working there. So in total, you're looking at tops 3 people waiting. Sorry, you know, maybe 2 actually is doing the massage, 1 is waiting.
Sorry, okay. So you wouldn't have any problem if we limited the number of masseurs to 2?
Right now, just give me 1 second. Do you mind? I'm just checking with a client. Just give me 1 second. Right now, we only have 1 full-time massage and 1 part-time.
Can I just ask, do you have to make an appointment or do you just turn up?
What? I'm so sorry, because I suppose I assume yesterday was the day I kind of launched myself to speak. It turned out yesterday was the public holiday, so I missed the Friday. And I called the council this morning. They asked me if I will ask permission from the panel. If you guys allow me to talk, I'll be talking in front of you guys.
Sorry. I didn't explain myself. The actual way the premises operates. So if I want to have a massage, do I have to make an appointment or do I just go, I'll just see if I can get in, turn up at whatever, 7 o'clock and see if I can get in to have a massage? Do the clients make an appointment? Like they have to book online or... Yes. Or ring up and say, is there any availability to have a massage or whatever?
In general speaking, you have to make an appointment because this is a 1 hour session. So you need to make sure there is available massage, stuff to have that slot. So if you walk in, there is a highly possibilities you can't get that spot. So lots of people, when they're doing massage, especially for these shops, the majority of the clients are from the existing, this is their second store, so they have an existing client. They understand the staff, they just make a phone call to make an appointment, just a general practice. If you ask me, if there's anyone walking, just say hello, can I have a massage? This is just random things, so we can't stop people doing that. But in general speaking, people tend to do an appointment first.
All right. The panel's come to a decision which is unanimous. We note the concern of Mr. Nemeth, whose concern mainly seems to be directed to the use per se rather than the actual permissibility of the use per se, but it is permissible. I asked Mr. Nemeth, could he point to any physical environmental adverse impact, and I didn't get an answer to that particular question. So the panel is going to approve the application as recommended, that is, the recommended hours of operation in condition one, bearing in mind that it is also a residential area as well as allowing this kind of business. So we aren't giving you what you ask for, but we're giving you some of what you ask for. So the condition one will stay as is. There will be an additional condition, which Ms. Wharton will now read out.
So I think the panel feels that the illuminated signage, particularly the style of signage you've got there, is inappropriate. And it really doesn't go with the proposal that it's a bona fide massage premises. So I want to do, in condition 7, and I've written this out so you can type it up, condition 7, it is headed up illuminated signage. I think it just should say illumination of premises in the heading. And then the actual wording of the condition, in condition 7, to delete the words and illuminated signage in the first part of the first sentence of condition 7, and add a new condition 8. No flashing or illuminated signs are approved or shall be provided in the premises. Any existing illuminated flashing signs visible from the street shall be removed.
Excuse me, sorry. Their existing illuminated sign is the shop front sign, and there's a light box.
The one in the shop window.
There's a flashing, the flashing one. Open.
100% removed. Yes, yeah. We will
there's
remove
two
that.
Signs. One
we can remove that.
Yeah.
We can remove this too. Yes. Yes.
I mean, we didn't see the premises at night, so you're saying the actual sign? It looked like something applied to the glass, though. Is there another sign that's illuminated? It didn't look like it was illuminated.
It shouldn't have to. If there's any illuminate sign, folks, we can keep the shop front sign and the light box. Any illuminate sign beyond these two, I will make sure they will remove it.
Right.
Would it be okay?
So the light box, the under awning sign,
yeah.
that can be illuminated. That's fine.
Yeah.
I thought the signage looked like it was applied to the glass.
It's just a fume, but I can go outside now. And if there's any flashing signs or anything, I'll make sure they will be removed.
Yeah, there are definitely two flashing signs there. Yeah. They're the ones we want gone.
Okay.
And we don't want them replaced.
Okay.
Should we give a reason?
Do you want me to dream up a reason for that?
Yeah, we're doing it. We're
okay.
Getting it done.
Okay.
Another 5 minutes.
It will take another 5 minutes, yeah.
I haven't even done the boarding house yet. That's why we shouldn't have it. Items on the agenda, David.
I shouldn't do it.
Oh, I know.
I'll write to them and tell them, yeah. Because, see, it's after 6 o'clock.
Mm. It would be different if we had things where... We only had an hour to discuss the items after the site visit. It was a lineup. But now we have to make it up on the line. We could have time to have all this sorted out. Mm. 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 Then we spend usually a lot of time after the meeting finessing the reasons and doing it, but we don't, like, and if we have to stay long, we have to stay long, but we don't have to come back to the chamber.
No, we don't, and then we'll sit there, and then I actually
check the reason. We need reasons for the decision. Well, I'll just say, reason for the decision, the panel supports the findings contained in the assessment report. and endorses the reasons for approval contained in that report, subject to the changes above. Subject. Supports the finding contained. What's the reason for approval contained that? Subject to the changes contained above.
Yeah.
And not in the above report. Subject to the changed conditions. Subject to the changed conditions above. Above, not in the above report, not contained.
Just above.
Yeah. Right. Finally, that's the determination. The panel is unanimous. Thank you very much. Now, before we deal with the final item, we will take a 5-minute adjournment. I want to go to the loo. And so does David.
Thank you. other problems because the panels are very costly as well. So
costly.
Yeah, so they were actually only going to have one a month at one point.
Yeah.
Because it just costs a fortune.
Too much for that.
So, but then I've had to renege on that because there was such a backlog of all the stuff.
Well, I find that generally we only have the one, and then if there is more for them, I'm Sydney only.
All right, sorry to keep you waiting. We can now move on to the final matter, the proposed new generation boarding house at 89 Balmain Road, Leichhardt. Is Linda Kelly here? Please come forward. For the record, your name and address, please.
Linda Kelly. I am an owner-occupier at 6/91 Balmain Road, and I'm the chairperson of the body corporate for that building.
Very good. You have 3 minutes starting now.
Thank you. Panel members, council officers, I'd like to acknowledge that we're on Gadigal land and any First Nations people here today. Thank you for the opportunity to address this panel. I speak against the officer recommendation and ask you to refuse this non-compliant DA. Personally, I don't object to a boarding house. I already have a boarding house next door and another around the corner. And I've actively supported council strategies regarding affordable housing in the past. But without a social housing service provider, I don't feel confident that this non-compliant DA will make a sustainable contribution to the local affordable housing stock. Indeed, neighbouring councils are currently making representation to the New South Wales State Government regarding the failure of the affordable housing SEP to stop low to medium income earners being priced out by expensive rent. Using the SEP provision for FSR gains, this DA does not meet council minimum requirements for the use of mechanical car stackers. The officer report concedes there is no other viable alternative for this small and odd-shaped lot size. But I can think of an alternative for you, and that is to refuse the DA. That's why we have standards in place to measure the performance of DAs. These controls are designed to protect the amenity of those who will reside there and their neighbours. And application of these controls in your decision making reduces the council organisational risk for a council that's currently operating at a deficit. Council only approves mechanical car stackers 2 or 3 times a year. And I ask, why are the officers ignoring planning measurement standards with their own recommendation? Are there internal KPIs officers need to meet regarding affordable housing stock that has come to them in this case, throwing these planning requirements out the window? On inquiry, the council director reassured me that where council approves the use of mechanical car stackers, they must, 1, comply with the Australian standards. Now, I understand the condition of deleting room 6 enables the stackers to be operational and go up and down, but we don't have the engineer's report in front of us to see if that still makes them comply to the Australian standards. The report that I read on the webpage said that